The IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Under pressure from potential donors, the Bush administration will allow a new agency to determine how to spend billions of dollars in reconstruction assistance for Iraq. The new agency will be run by the World Bank and the United Nations and will work independently of the American occupation. They are to announce the change at a donor conference in Madrid later this week. The change effectively establishes some of the international control over Iraq that the United States opposed in the drafting of the United Nations Security Council resolution that passed on Thursday. Thursday's resolution referred to two established agencies to ensure that aid would be audited. But diplomats say other countries were unwilling to make donations, calling the United States as an occupying power, controlling Iraq's reconstruction and self-rule. Eight Marine reservists accused in the mistreatment of prisoners of war in Iraq were being held at Camp Pendleton on charges ranging from negligent homicide to dereliction of duty. A lawyer representing one of the men said the Army did not have the necessary personnel to run the detention camp, and the reservists were untrained for the job. The reservists belonged to the 2nd Battalion, 25th Marine Regiment. Their hometowns were not immediately released, and it was not known if all had retained lawyers. Legal proceedings were expected Monday against a college student who was accused of hiding box cutters and other banned items aboard two Southwest Airlines planes. Prosecutors were still trying to determine what charges they might bring against Nathaniel Heatwall, a 20-year-old college student who had warned officials he would try to bring forbidden articles onto commercial flights to expose holes in airline security. Officials said he sent the government an email last month warning of his intention to carry out the plan, and he included dates and locations where he would carry out the attacks. Heatwall said he had been interviewed by the FBI in connection with the Southwest Airlines incidents on Thursday night. More IE America Network news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home.
To the contrary, they claim that corporations have a constitutional free speech right to barrage us as often as they want. Think about that. They sued us for trying to keep them from bothering us. But wait a minute. Guess whose names have cropped up among the 50 million on the Do Not Call list? Top executives of telemarketing corporations and of the Direct Marketing Association itself. In a delicious bit of journalistic digging, the Hartford Courant newspaper found that 11 of DMA's top honchos have their home numbers on the list, including two senior vice presidents, three other vice presidents, and four members of the association's board of directors. Apparently, those who make big bucks from the business of bothering people at home don't want to be bothered themselves. There are so many calls I don't want, complained a DMA senior vice president who recently retired. They are disturbing my routine, he says. Yes, sir, we know just how you feel. This is Jim Hightower saying, if there was a merit badge for hypocrisy, these people would be Eagle Scouts. I say they should have to publicize their phone numbers so we consumers can call them at home every night, right at dinner time.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system and streaming across the world on the Internet on several different Internet radio stations, including RadioPower.org, Live365.com, and IEAmericaRadio.com. Boy, so much going on today. It's just an extraordinary day. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson, "Peace and friendship with all mankind is our wisest policy, and I wish we may be permitted to pursue it." And in that context, an interesting juxtaposition here, an interesting, I don't know if you heard about this award. Well, let me get to that in just a minute. Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. are going at it. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It's going to come to a head, I think, on November 7th. But today is day 252 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 763 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, that being Osama bin Laden. And day 98, the Karl Rove is walking around loose. Here's the thoughts of Mr. Bush Sr. Oh, and this is also today. So interesting, two interesting anniversaries. Today on October 20th, 1888, Harper's Weekly came out with a cartoon on their cover about Andrew Carnegie, where he says he's standing in front of a multi-headed hydra, which represents his ownership in the sugar industry, the steel industry, the lumber industry, the salt industry, and the oil industry. And there's an Uncle Sam standing there looking at him in this kind of skeptical fashion. And the headline, or the caption for the cartoon says, "A trustworthy beast." And then the quote from Carnegie, "The public may regard trusts or combinations with serene confidence." Keep in mind, this was within 2 years of the passage of the Sherman Antitrust Act, where they were trying to stop this kind of behavior, which, of course, has again resurrected itself. This is also today. Today, the 20th of October, 2003, it's the 61st anniversary. Now, and it's interesting, this story was just picked up yesterday by the Associated Press. This is the first time it's kind of made its way out of the conspiracy ranks into the mainstream press. Today is the 61st anniversary of the Union Banking Corporation, which was headed by Prescott Bush, George Bush, our current president's grandfather. It was shut down under the Trading with the Enemy Act 61 years ago today for supplying Hitler. And was publicly reported in the newspapers and things. Somehow it hasn't made it into any of the official biographies. But anyway, here, now this interesting thing. First of all, let's just hear two different voices of father and son about some of the issues of our day. Here's George Bush Elder.
"I have nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors."
He's speaking there of people who out CIA agents. And as apparently somebody in this administration, perhaps with the permission, and perhaps it was even Karl Rove, perhaps with his permission, it's hard to imagine anybody doing something of those of that proportion without his permission, and perhaps even with the permission of the President of the United States, in which case this would be something much greater than Watergate. And so the, you know, what's being done about the leak? Well, they asked George, and he said,
"And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official
who leaked the information."
"Yeah. This is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have..."
Right, yeah. So now it's starting to come out in the open that George Bush Sr. is a little upset with George Bush Jr. And by the way, this isn't the topic I want to get into in this hour. I want to get into this question of, does the marketplace create the middle class, or is government required? There are a lot of interesting stuff, but I just wanted to touch on this because it is timely. It has to do with the day, as it were. Ted Kennedy. Senator Edward Kennedy has been awarded by the George H.W. Bush library, as it were.
here it is. The first father, former President George H.W. Bush, has given his own most treasured award. Here it is. It's the 2003 George Bush Award for Excellence in Public Service. It's not even like the library's award. It's his personal award. The 2003 George Bush Award for Excellence in Public Service went to Ted Kennedy. It will be awarded to him on November 7th. In an editorial in the Boston Globe, where they noticed these kinds of things, this being Ted Kennedy's district, Senator Kennedy's district, since the current President Bush, Georgie Ann Geyer wrote on 1018, since the current President Bush veered away from the real war against terrorism in Afghanistan and went adventuring in Iraq, much to his father's dismay, just about everybody close to Washington politics has known of the policy schism between father and son. It was politically and philosophically obvious. And they go on to say nobody really wanted to talk about it in public. You know, it's just the family doesn't talk. You know, who wants to air dirty laundry? And then the editorial goes on. She says, now it's all out. Father Bush has done it in his own preferred, nuanced way, the way establishment gentlemen operate. But he has revealed the depth of his disagreement with his impetuously uninformed son. This by giving this award to Teddy Kennedy. And they go on to say, you know, the tension between these two men reveals itself daily. November 7th, we're going to see how this comes out. Here's what the spokesman for George Bush Sr. said of Ted Kennedy and why they were giving him the award. He said they were giving him this award, the George Bush 2003 Award for Excellence in Public Service Award, because Ted Kennedy, quote, consistently and courageously fought for his principles, end quote, and is, quote, an inspiration to all Americans, end quote. So, interesting times coming, I suspect. In the meantime, or at the same time, or whatever, here we have this situation with our economy, and some fascinating stuff, some really interesting, some really interesting statistics. And you go, oh, statistics, that sounds really, no, really. Morgan Stanley, you know, the investment banking firm, did one of their analysts, a fellow by the name of Stephen Roach. I'm not sure that analyst is his exact title, but one of the guys who works for them and writes for them, in a piece that's published on their website at morganstanley.com, goes into this question of why is it that we are in the midst of a business recovery by classic definitions. That is to say, corporations are more profitable, cash is flowing around with increased velocity, the stock market is going up, the rich are getting richer, as it were. You know, what the recession has ended officially. And yet, there are not more employees. There are not more people getting jobs. Some of the 56,000 were created in the last quarter, but nothing like what you would expect. In fact, what Roach points out in this piece for Morgan Stanley is that by this point in an economic recovery cycle, you would expect that several million jobs would have been created. And instead, it's 50,000. Now, no doubt more will come, and the economy will improve. It's the old thing of, you know, if you want to see me looking like I'm wealthy, just give me a credit card with no balance on it and tell me that my children or grandchildren are going to have to pay it off and I can live as high as I want. I mean, that's what's going on right now. That's absolutely what's going on right now. We are borrowing from our grandchildren, pouring the money into this economy and into Iraq. Government spending is at an all-time high. And, of course, that's going to stimulate the economy. But is that, you know, on the one hand, is that a good thing? But even more than that is, where are the jobs? And what Roach says is that the reason that productivity has gone up and the reason that corporate profits have gone up, but there haven't been jobs along with it, is because the jobs are being created. Millions of jobs are being created by these companies in North America, in the United States, and that reflect increases in productivity in this economy. But they're being created in China, in Malaysia, in India, in Ireland. They're being created outside the United States, both blue-collar jobs and white-collar jobs. And the consequence of this is that because companies don't list those expenses as payroll expenses, even though work is getting done. In other words, if you have a hotel chain, for example, that decides to outsource its reservation staff to India or to Ireland. And I called a hotel a couple days ago and made a reservation, and the person who answered on the other end had an interesting accent, and I said, "Where are you?" And he said, "I'm in Ireland." And I said, "Are you Irish?" And he said, "No, I'm Slovenian." And so it's like, you know, probably the Irish wouldn't work for the wages that they're paying. They're probably paying the bottom end of the Irish minimum wage, which is probably below our minimum wage. You know, I didn't get into that with him. But the point is that when that hotel company said, okay, said, you know, created that job in Ireland, it's not created as payroll. Either the company itself set up a subsidiary in Ireland to do that, or more likely, they simply hired an Irish company that runs a phone bank and said, okay, you do this work for us. So when they write the check, they're not writing the check to Joe Blow, the guy who answered the phone when I called. They're writing the check to a corporation in Ireland. So it doesn't show up as a labor cost. Yet, the reservations are still being made. And so what that shows up as is an increase in productivity. More work is getting done, and the cost of labor is going down. Therefore, productivity is increasing. And these increased productivity figures, according to this guy in Morgan Stanley, are a reflection of the fact that we are outsourcing all these jobs. It's one of the reasons why the United States has the highest productivity in the world, because we have the most outsourced jobs on earth. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 19 minutes after the hour. Philip in Florida, we've got about a minute before the break. If your question is going to take longer than that, I can hold you over the break. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, what's up?
Well, I'd like to be held over. This
okay.
is what's going on here in Florida is just incredible. This is socialism for the rich. Now, Jeb Bush does not have enough money for the schools, so the schools have had significant layoffs. Okay. There's not enough books. Teachers spend up to $1,000 out of their own pockets in order to run a classroom.
Yeah, Philip, you've started to set it up for us. Hold right there.
All right.
And we'll finish that thought when we come back from this commercial break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
So you've graduated from college, got a new job, a new place to live, even a new dog, but you're still paying the same old high-interest student loans. Well, we can help. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE, anytime, 24/7. We're College Loan Corporation, and we're dedicated to helping you refinance your college loans with interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. Get on with your new life and call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, The Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Dave.
Hey there.
Dave has a problem.
Maybe you have the problem understanding that we can be under attack at any time.
Dave suffers from TMRWM, otherwise known as too much or right wing amidiitis. Or something like that.
The alarm's at orange now. What does that mean? Where's my chart?
But Dave's not alone.
Another Saddam tape. He's still alive.
There are millions of Americans all over the United States suffering from TMRWM.
Oh, there's weapons of mass destruction there. Somewhere. They'll find them.
Symptoms of TMRWM include insomnia, irritability, suspecting more than three people a day of being a terrorist.
That guy right there looks like one. So does this kid. You're not fooling me, buddy.
And much, much more. But there is a cure.
There is?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio weekdays on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network. Get more information at ieamericaradio.com. Let's save our country one American at a time.
Thank you, IE America.
Let go of me, Dave.
Sorry.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Real quickly, I got a message from JV listening to KTRC in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She said, on Friday last, Sarah from Santa Fe called and commented on the League of Women Voters, presumably referring to the Santa Fe chapter. And she wanted to just make it clear that the reason why they ask people to write things down in index cards is because if they don't, people give speeches, which I've certainly noticed. Last Friday night, I was at a gig with Bernie Sanders, and people got up to ask him questions, and half the time they gave a speech before they'd asked the question. And then she said also that the League was not did not bail out on the presidential debates. She said we were forced out because we refused to submit questions to the candidates before the debate, and we insisted on including third-party candidates. So we have set the record straight. Thanks for updating us, JV. Now back to Philip in Florida. Philip, what city are you in?
Well, I'm in the Tampa Bay region.
Okay, great. And you were making your point.
Here's the issue. The GOP and all their surrogates on talk radio always decry socialism. Well, this here in Florida is socialism for the rich. Now, given that we don't have enough money in the budget for education, they're laying off teacher aides, et cetera, don't have enough money for class size reduction, which is a constitutional amendment, which the voters voted on. Jeb says, hey, I don't have... No, I'm sorry, can't do it. Okay, Jeb is going to give, and I hope you're sitting for this.
I am.
$510 million to a company called Scripps Research to locate their next facility in Palm Beach County. We are going
to. Any idea how many jobs Scripps Research is saying that will create?
Those people are probably going to come with the jobs. In other words, they'll be right behind in the moving vans.
Yeah.
Now, given that we have no state income tax, the state will not recover that money in state income taxes. The only way they're going to recover any kind of money is when the employees who come with the company, I guess they go out and buy a shirt or a washing machine and pay sales tax.
Yeah.
$510 million. Now, of course, and they're moving from a place called La Jolla, California, okay, to West Palm Beach County. Now, Sony Corporation, the Sony Electronics, the people who distribute all the TVs and, you know, VCRs mm-hmm. and everything else, they're closing corporate headquarters in Park Ridge, New Jersey. They announced this on 1 October. And they are moving to San Diego. Now, you know how much the yeah. state of California is giving them to move to San Diego?
Yeah,
not a dollar.
Hundreds of millions. Yeah.
Nothing.
Oh, nothing.
Nothing. But Jeb is going to give these people $510 million of taxpayer money to
yeah,
move
this
their
is, this is a real,
branch.
This is a, yeah, this is a real problem, Philip. And I appreciate your calling and sharing that with us. I there's a chapter about that in Unequal Protection. I wrote about it at some length, and I talk about it on the program that it's not just socialism for the rich. What it indicates is the level of what used to be called corruption, and is nowadays called doing business as usual, which is and attracts back to the problem that corporations have achieved through a bizarre series of legal footworks that go back to 1886 in the Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad case have achieved the status of human beings under the Bill of Rights and therefore have the free speech rights to lobby our elected officials and to give them money and to basically bribe them. And we see this absolute mess. The middle class in America is the key, in my opinion, to stability, to democracy, to economic stability, to political stability, and apparently to worldwide stability, or building a middle class around the world. But many of the European countries are building and have built a very good and strong middle class. Japan has built a strong middle class. And China seems to be moving in that direction. India is moving in that direction. Our middle class is collapsing. How do we bring about a middle class in the United States? Is it something the market does or the government? I'm going to share the details of that with you in just a second. This is Tom Hartman, high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists say DNA in a tissue of whales tells a story that more people need to hear. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People who hunted whales in the North Atlantic Ocean years ago kept records of how many they saw. The records go back about 150 years, and they're still important today. The International Whaling Commission uses them as a measure of how many whales inhabited the North Atlantic before whaling began, and it uses that estimate to regulate hunting now. But recent studies suggest that those estimates are way off, and that whale numbers might be dangerously low. Steve Palumbi is a biologist at Stanford University, and he studies the genes of fin whales, minke whales, and humpbacks. Palumbi says there is a tremendous amount of variability in their genetic makeup. In fact, he says there's so much variability that it suggests their populations were much higher than what was recorded by whalers a century or more ago. He says the numbers written down in old logbooks are largely based on unknown papers and observations.
What that suggests to us is that there's been too much complacency in just accepting those historic numbers based on whale logbooks. The way those numbers have been generated and the way they've been used to set whale conservation targets is not very transparent. It's very difficult to figure out exactly how that was done.
Palumbi says the International Whaling Commission considers whale populations to be stable as long as they're 50% of what they were before hunting began. but he says 50% of what's in the old whaling records is much smaller than 50% of the whales that were really in the oceans. The genetic research suggests that some whale populations today are at less than 10% of their natural numbers and that they might need serious protection to start recovering. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Tick-tick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
narwhal.
Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go. The opium crop was blown away. Let them poppies grow. Thanks to U.S. troops, it's back today. Only goes to show. Go down Wall Street. Sell off my shares today. Tell my broker. Put it all in blow.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman, Truth in Broadcasting, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. A poll that was recently done by the Pew Center, as I recall, said, it's an ABC News Washington Post poll, by an almost 2-to-1 margin in this poll, 62% to 32%. Americans said they preferred a universal system that would provide coverage to everyone under a government program as opposed to the current employer-based system. This health coverage. This has to be absolutely shocking for folks like Dick Gephardt, who is, you know, in that last debate, the woman said, well, you know, I own a small business. What are you going to do, you know, to help the problem that I've got? And he starts saying that he's going to force her to provide health insurance to her employees that she's not providing right now. And it was just, you know, it just didn't float. And then Kerry came up and figured that out and just, you know, ate Gephardt's lunch with that particular answer to that particular question. But I wonder how long it's going to be before the Democratic candidates figure out that this radical notion of single-payer health care, where it's not socialized medicine, it's not where the government is administering medicine, it's the government simply paying the bill. And you get all the insurance companies out of the loop. Let them go bankrupt. Let them insure something else. Get them out of the business. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, Blue Cross Blue Shield, which provided our insurance, was a nonprofit corporation. You had to be nonprofit to provide insurance. Kaiser Permanente used to be a nonprofit. In fact, Blue Cross Blue Shield here in Vermont still is nonprofit, and they're petitioning the state for permission to go for profit. So you've got all these health insurance companies that are in the middle. They're in between you and me and or our employers or our government or whoever's paying the bill and the payment of the medical bills. And as a result, they're skimming money off the top. They've got to show a profit. You've got to have 5-10% return on investment there for your, or less, but, you know, whatever. You've got to show a profit. You've got to pay dividends to your stockholders. You've got to pay those multi-million, multi-hundred-million-dollar a year salaries to the CEOs. You've got to pay for the corporate jets and the advertising and the promotion and the salespeople. You've got to pay the lobbyists. You've got to donate hundreds of millions of dollars to various political campaigns and politicians. All of those expenses get paid for by you and me. And that's why when Medicare handles money, about $3 out of every $100 sticks to the fingers of the administrators. That is, that's the cost, the overhead, the cost of administration. Whereas when private health insurance companies handle our health care dollars, somewhere between $15 and $24, depending on the company and the part of the country, sticks to the fingers of the health insurance company. Yes, they might be more efficient than Medicare. Maybe they're providing it actually for 2.7%. But that's not the cost. The cost is much higher because they have all these other expenses. And you've got several of the Democratic candidates who are still trying to work with the insurance companies. Why? Well, because they're huge political donors. We have a broken and corrupt political system. That's one problem, but we also have this. And so here we have the middle class now freaking out. People are terrified they're going to lose their insurance, those who have it. And those who don't have it are terrified they're going to get sick. And even people with insurance are discovering that if they get sick, suddenly they've got $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 in co-payments, and this wasn't covered, and oh, we forgot about that. Now that's a pre-existing condition, and all these other games that these companies play. 8 in 10 Americans in this poll said it is more important to provide health care coverage for all Americans, even if it means higher taxes, than to hold down taxes but leave some people uncovered. We have a situation here, too, where low-income, this Associated Press article by David Carey, low-income kids feel sting of budget cuts. Many low-income families are trying to make the switch from welfare to work and say the lack of affordable, quality child care is the biggest headache they face. I think a headache is something you would feel rather than face, but nonetheless, the lack of child care. What are the things that make the middle class? What are the things that create a middle class? You'll notice that history doesn't show a lot of middle classes. If you look at the history of capitalism and free enterprise, if you look at the history of what you might call democracy, you see that typically, I mean, look at the Victorian era of England, the robber baron era in the United States, the early years after the founding of this country. Well, there was more of a middle class then, but there was more wealth just laying around, basically. Anything we could, you know, all the land we wanted that we could steal from the Indians and all these kinds of things. And it just, you know, it just reached the point where this, okay, what are the things that it takes to make a middle class? The strongest middle class we had in the United States was during the highest tax period, when our taxes were the highest. During the 1930s, you'll recall that there was a huge tax cut in the 1920s. There was a series of huge tax cuts. And Herbert Hoover's first answer to the Great Depression was another tax cut. And FDR raised the income tax, the top marginal tax rate, to 90%. 90%. And a strong estate tax. And what did that do over the next 40 years? It built the first substantial middle class in the United States. And similar progressive taxation policies across Europe have done the same thing. He also established a minimum wage in 1936. Truman tried to institute national health care. He tried to put in a single-payer system. Got shot down. We talked about that last week. There are certain, what some people call entitlements, there are certain things that must be available for free. And it's not free, of course, that we all pay for. But there's a certain amount of leveling in society that has to happen in order to create a middle class. It's just that simple. You can go on and on all day long with the rhetoric of libertarianism and, oh, you know, freedom this and liberty that and blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is, and oh, you know, it's socialism, it's communism. No, sorry. We have a mixed economy in the United States where the government plays a role in it and free enterprise plays a role in it, and that is absolutely necessary to create a middle class. And some of the things that you have to have are, you have to have free education. Thomas Jefferson figured this out. It's why he started the University of Virginia, which was free. You have to have free education for all. And it has to be a good education, which is a terrible problem that we have right now in the United States. You have to have some sort of guarantee of retirement. Teddy Roosevelt talked about this when he first defined what a living wage was. FDR put it into place with Social Security. And back then, you actually could retire. You have to have a living wage. You have to have some sort of a social safety net. And according to Harry Truman, you have to have national health care. You also have to prevent dynasty building with an estate tax. And this is, again, you'll find James Madison talking about this. There are no dynasties left from the Revolutionary era. The dynasties that we have in the United States came after those laws were broken down in the 1860s, 1870s, and 1880s. And the dynasties, the Rockefellers and the DuPonts and the Carnegies and on, most of them come from the late 19th, early 20th century. There was about a 40-year period in there where it was quite easy to build a dynasty because those laws had been broken down, the taxes had been broken down, they had in many ways seized control of the government, and it produced the populist revolt, which then brought us the 17th Amendment, which gave us direct election of the Senate, and the 20th Amendment, allowing women to vote, and a whole number of other things. The changes in California that said you can recall people. But the two keys were, number one, we had a strong progressive taxation system. And number two, we kept our jobs here with tariffs. The first tariff in the United States was passed in 1784. It was pushed by Tench Cox, who was a friend of all the founders, and he was a businessman and got involved in politics. I got a book about him someplace around here. It's not right in front of me, so I can't tell you who wrote it, but there's only one book about him, one biography, and about how aggressive and how active he was all the time trying to get out there and say, no, we need to have tariffs to protect our domestic industries, to keep our jobs here, to keep our industries here, to nurture them, to build them. And we have done that in the United States up until the last decade. And you have to do that. And you provide a stable currency, stable interest rates, balanced budgets. And this stuff is just so common sense. And the conservatives have gone so far off following this extreme right-wing ideology that doesn't even qualify as conservative. Dwight Eisenhower would not recognize what is being done right now. He would say, well, that's sort of like John Birch Society stuff, isn't it? Or Ayn Rand stuff. Yeah, it's over the top, around the corner, off the edge. The government should be the employer of last resort. This is far more effective than just handing people checks. And FDR did this brilliantly, and here we have this situation in the United States. If you want to have the government as the employer of last resort, consider... There's a nice little piece here that Stephen Pizzo, wrote. I don't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, in California, the condition of the country was far worse than anyone dared imagine. Engineers released their findings this September, and using a grammar school grading system, they assigned grades to describe the state of disrepair they found. The country's roads got a D. Aviation infrastructure got a D. Schools a D-. Wastewater treatment facilities a D. Dams a D. Hazardous waste a D+. And even though the nation is a major oil producer, the energy sector got a D+. In all, the experts said it would take $1.6 trillion over the next 5 years to bring the country's infrastructure up to modern standards. What's the country? The United States of America. No, they weren't talking about Iraq. And they said that if we allowed it to continue crumbling, the ongoing neglect would add $300 billion a year to the repair bill. And yet, at the same time, what are we doing? We're handing money to Halliburton to repair Iraq, to rebuild Iraq, and we're not doing... And if we did this at home, we could again become the employer of last resort and rescue our economy. I mean, the process is so straightforward. It's not like we haven't done it before. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Armin in Florida is on the line. Armin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Armin.
I want to compliment you first. you don't know how much I enjoy your show. It's so informative. It's so educating. And your tone is just absolute spot on.
Well, thank you, Armin.
And it's the truth, what you teach. And that's very important, too. And
okay, enough being nice to me. What did you call about?
Well, I'm just, first off, I just want everybody to know how lucky they are that you're there.
Oh, thank you.
Because in these very treacherous times, we really need more people like you instead of less.
And like you too, Armin. And what's your point now?
Well, I was just going to make a couple points. First, I'd like to make one about insurance companies. We're having problems with ours. They changed the terms of the contract without informing us in writing or a personal call. And, you know, if that ever happens to you, you think you got insurance, and they tell you right when you're in the hospital after having a heart attack, oh, no, we've changed that.
Right, all those contracts have things in them that say may subject to change without notice, or subject to change if it's going to change, we'll send you an email or we'll post it to our website or something, like you're supposed to read it every day.
Right, but not only that, but they tried to say ours was changed from, you know, or was catastrophic up to a million, and then they're trying to say, oh no, it's only 5,000 in the hospital. Can you believe that? What a joke!
Yeah. Incredible.
But anyway, I was talking to some attorneys, and I am pursuing this, and they're telling me that in Florida, Jeb Bush is letting insurance companies and their lobbyists just sit down and create their own rules.
And, oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's not insurance. That's a monopoly. And yeah. I can't imagine any rational human being that has any ability whatsoever to function could condone monopolies by the foxes. And,
yeah,
you know,
Armin, I agree with you, and I appreciate your call. You have identified it's not just Jeb Bush in Florida who's letting the insurance companies write the rules. It's virtually every state. When we moved here to Vermont from Georgia 8 years ago, I had insurance with Geico, and they dropped me. And the same thing, when my brother-in-law moved here 6 years ago, he had Geico, and they dropped him. And we called him, I said, what's the problem? Oh, we just, you know, whatever. It turns out that there's a whole bunch of insurance companies that if you move to Vermont, they will drop you because they don't want to do business with people in Vermont, because Vermont's the only state that has strong consumer protection laws when it comes to insurance. A legacy of Howard Dean's governorship. Joe in Brookings, Oregon's on the line. Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, I would just like to remind people that the Green Party already supports universal health care in its platform. And, of course,
right.
Dennis Kucinich is a very, very vocal proponent of universal health care. So if people want universal health care, all they got to do is support Dennis Kucinich for president, even though everyone says he's not a real contender. I mean, the fact of the matter is nobody's voted yet.
Yeah, and I think it's extraordinary that... I think it's extraordinary that Dennis is out there saying that, and I honor him for that. And you know, I think that the other candidates have not yet figured out. I mean, Howard Dean has been kind of dancing around the edges of it, talking about, well, we've got to do it incrementally in a couple of steps, but that single-payer health care is what he wants to get to also. But the other ones, I mean, Gebhardt's plan is just an absolute mess. And the other ones, they're all Lieberman and Kerry, they're all talking about getting in bed with the insurance companies. And it's disaster. Joe, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman in the Democracy Zone. Talk radio for the rest of us. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Ask how. Ask now. Ask sure. The great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a
a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, man, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy.
I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No, I'm talking about now.
Like a tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
An email here from Jamie. Jamie has a great idea. He was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Our friend down in South Carolina who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech. Jamie says, I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature. One word above the other. And then have a strip of paper that is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, and after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up.
We love Bush. We love Bush. We love Bush.
Impeach Bush.
Huh?
You didn't know I'm going to say that, did you?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network. The Washington Post last week had an article in which they noted it is not clear where families in the middle class are headed. Essentially, what they were the whole article was about how the net worth of the typical middle-class family in America is $74,000, and that includes their home equity. They have no cash to meet major emergencies, not enough for retirement, and if they lost their job, they'd be out of luck within 60 days. Similarly, the New York Times on October 19th ran an article about Levi's. By the end of the year, the New York Times, by Ralph Blumenthal, this article says, by the end of the year, the last pair of Levi's made in America will roll off sewing and finishing lines. Since 1995, Levi has halved its domestic workforce in favor of cheaper foreign labor. Levi Strauss & Company's last three Canadian plants will close next March.
The steps follow the closing of its original plant in Valencia, California last year. In Texas, Levi Strauss closed 8 plants in El Paso and others in Brownsville and the Rio Grande Valley. The work is being contracted to 50 different countries, all low-wage places. And then they talk about this one woman, Mrs. Flores, who was profiled in the article, that she was making $18 an hour. She was a member of the local union. She had worked for 24 years for Levi and Company. She had 4 weeks of paid vacation, family medical and dental benefits in exchange for $24 a week. She says, where am I going to get a job like this? And then they point out, after NAFTA took effect in 1994, Mr. Raynard of Unite said, the country lost 785,000 apparel jobs. The middle class is not just shrinking. The middle class in the United States is in danger of being wiped out. We are moving in the direction with the conservative economic policies that are being put forward, these extreme conservative policies, these failed policies that have historically led nations into aristocracy and poverty at the same time, where you have very, very rich people who become so rich and powerful they create dynastic empires, and huge numbers of people absolutely destitute and nothing in between. And what we have seen with the experience of the middle class in the United States, and certainly, obviously, with the experience of the strong, solid middle class in many European countries, where the top tax rates are 70, 80, 90%, where estates are taxed, where the government is the employer of last resorts, and where tariffs are in place to protect domestic economies, is that the government has to participate if we're going to create a middle class. Tag, you're it. Pass the information along to somebody else. Let your elected officials know as well. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the place where smart people get their news.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of a brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. 8 Marine reservists accused in the mistreatment of prisoners of war in Iraq were being held at Camp Pendleton on charges ranging from negligent homicide to dereliction of duty. A lawyer representing one of the men said the Army did not have the necessary personnel to run the detention camp, and the reservists were untrained for the job. The reservists belonged to the 2nd Battalion, 25th Marine Regiment. Their hometowns were not immediately released, and it was not known if all had retained lawyers. Under pressure from potential donors, the Bush administration will allow a new agency to determine how to spend billions of dollars in reconstruction assistance for Iraq. The new agency will be run by the World Bank and the United Nations and will work independently of the American occupation. They are to announce the change at a donor conference in Madrid later this week. The change effectively establishes some of the international control over Iraq that the United States opposed in the drafting of the United Nations Security Council resolution that passed on Thursday. Thursday's resolution referred to two established agencies to ensure that aid would be audited. But diplomats say other countries were unwilling to make donations, calling the United States as an occupying power, controlling Iraq's reconstruction and self-rule. A new poll suggests that unease with the current healthcare system has Americans thinking about a new approach that would mean care for all Americans and changes in laws governing prescription drugs. A 70% majority said it should be legal for Americans to buy prescription drugs outside the United States, according to the ABC Washington Post poll. Such purchases can save money, but they also violate the law. The poll also found that more than half of Americans, 54%, are dissatisfied with the quality of health care in the United States. That dissatisfaction is 10 percentage points higher than in 2000 and higher than it has been in the past decade. More IE American Network news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
Tall people earn considerably more money throughout their lives than their shorter co-workers, with each inch adding about $789 a year in pay, according to a new study. Two university professors analyzed results of four studies that included thousands of participants and examined details of their work and personal lives. The study was controlled for gender, weight, and age. For the IE America Radio Network, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Nothing complements a ball game like a bag of roasted peanuts. I like to eat them 3-4 at a time, and I'm talking the jumbo ones, lightly salted and fresh from the shell.
Ah, peanuts, baseball, and the crack of my tooth!
Don't let toothaches interfere with your life. When you can't get to the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol. It contains the same strong pain relief medicine your dentist uses, so it works faster than you can say, ah. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone. Use as directed.
No does not seem to be a concept that the ever-intrusive telemarketing industry is capable of comprehending. Even after 50 million Americans, including yours truly, signed up for the Do Not Call list that Congress approved, finally allowing us beleaguered folks a way to stop the incessant, inconvenient, and irritating sales calls from phone hucksters, the industry just kept coming. Indeed, the Direct Marketing Association, the front group for 5,000 of these diabolical dialing companies, has waged a relentless legal battle against us privacy seekers, claiming in court that we 50 million people have no right to say no to their automated invasions of our homes. To the contrary, they claim that corporations have a constitutional free speech right to barrage us as often as they want. Think about that. They sued us for trying to keep them from bothering us. But wait a minute. Guess whose names have cropped up among the 50 million on the Do Not Call list? Top executives of telemarketing corporations and of the Direct Marketing Association itself. In a delicious bit of journalistic digging, the Hartford Courant newspaper found that 11 of DMA's top honchos have their home numbers on the list, including two senior vice presidents, three other vice presidents, and four members of the association's board of directors. Apparently, those who make big bucks from the business of bothering people at home don't want to be bothered themselves. There are so many calls I don't want, complained a DMA senior vice president who recently retired. They are disturbing my routine, he says. Yes, sir, we know just how you feel. This is Jim Hightower saying, if there was a merit badge for hypocrisy, these people would be Eagle Scouts. I say they should have to publicize their phone numbers so we consumers can call them at home every night, right at dinner time.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Congressman Henry Waxman had the following to say about what's up with Halliburton and the U.S., relationship here.
Halliburton's charging the U.S. government outrageously high prices to import gasoline into Iraq. They're charging taxpayers nearly $1 per gallon to truck gasoline 400 miles from Kuwait to Baghdad. One expert called this price gouging. Another said it was highway robbery. Millions of Americans want to help Iraqis, but they don't want to be fleeced
by Halliburton. And Congressman Waxman pointing out a very real problem. Now, on the flip side of this, I get an email from Dean in San Antonio, and he says, this is incredible. He says, was Saddam an imminent threat to us? I don't think he was. However, he was a future threat to us through his funding and assisting those who would do us harm. See, now, this, for our second hour here, I want to get into this. Has the Pentagon been brainwashing Americans? And Dean is clearly one of those people, you know, the public misperceptions where they did the study and they looked at people who believed three substantial lies that have been put out by this administration. For example, that Saddam was behind 9/11 or, you know, had some relationship to 9/11 in any way. Or that Saddam was supporting any kind of terrorism anywhere other than the checks that he was sending to the suicide bombers in Israel, which is, of course, deplorable and stoppable, in my opinion. In any case, that Saddam was any kind of threat to us. You know, so here we've got a guy who's clearly been, and they found that those people who watched Fox News constituted 80% of the people who believed the factual inaccuracies, was how they were referred to. Whereas those people who got their news principally from newspapers or from public broadcasting, only 20% of them were the ones who believed the lies. So anyhow, Dean in San Antonio goes on. He says, you know, was Saddam an imminent threat to us? I don't think he was. However, he was a future threat to us through his funding and assisting those who would do us harm, or would his kids blank us around at some point in the future? The answer is an absolute 100% yes, so we go kill him and them. I am all for it. It is impossible for you politically correct liberals to actually be proactive in the world. If we elect you guys, the terrorist rights will be respected while more U.S. citizens will die. This is the message that I am getting out to everyone I know. So poor Dean in San Antonio is letting everyone he knows know that he doesn't know the facts. And there are so many Americans who are in this sad state of affairs. He says, oh, P.S., didn't Bush win the recount in Florida when the independent media recounted? Actually, no, Dean, Bush didn't. If the recount in Florida had been done according to, if they had just recounted the counties that Al Gore wanted recounted in the beginning, then Bush would have won. But if they recounted the entire state, which is what the Florida Supreme Court required, and what Al Gore later was asking for, according to the New York Times and the other newspapers that did the actual recount, Al Gore won. So, anyhow, just, you know, it's right there. You can find it in the New York Times archives. This is not rocket science. But back to this thing, the Congressional Research Service released a report last Wednesday saying that, this is an email I got from Michael Toms over at New Dimensions Radio, saying that the military operations could continue without any kind of supplemental appropriations until May. Now, it's October right now, and they could have, and we have the ability to maintain the level of troop placement and rebuilding and the funding of Halliburton and all this stuff that we're doing right now. We could do that through May with the appropriation that they already have, according to the Congressional Research Service. So it didn't need to be voted on immediately. Why all the rush? Well, I would suggest to you that it is part of this extraordinary disinformation campaign, and that we haven't seen anything like this in the United States, possibly ever. This Office of Strategic Information, remember, when Don Rumsfeld announced that he had created an agency within the Pentagon to release disinformation into the press of foreign nations. And the concern was that he was also going to be lying to Americans. And he said, we'll stop that. Actually, that's the conventional wisdom. Everybody thinks he said, we will stop that. We'll make it go away. We're not going to do that anymore. Let me read you what he actually said, his exact words. He said, and then there was the Office of Strategic Influence. You may recall that. And oh my goodness gracious, isn't that terrible? Henny penny, the sky is going to fall. I went down that next day and said, fine, if you want to savage this thing, fine, I'll give you the corpse. There's the name. You can have the name. But I'm going to keep doing every single thing that needs to be done, and I have. Isn't that interesting? He said, we're going to keep doing this. We're just going to call it something else. And in fact, no major U.S. media outlet, no newspapers, no televisions, no wire service, no major reports, no major magazines, reported that quote from Donald Rumsfeld in its entirety or the significance of it. The closest you got was an analysis by William Arkin in the Los Angeles Times, which suggested that Rumsfeld was redesigning the U.S. military to make, quote, information warfare, end quote, central to its functions. And that this new way of doing things, quote, blurs or even erases the boundaries between factual information and news on the one hand and public relations, propaganda, and psychological warfare on the other hand. Arkin further said, while the policy ostensibly targets foreign enemies, its most likely victim will be the American electorate. Poor schlubs like Dean in San Antonio, who think that they're actually hearing news, when in fact what they're hearing is carefully orchestrated propaganda. Consider, I mean, even have presidential candidates saying, oh yeah, let's vote for that $87 billion. Pat Leahy, our senator here, my senator here in Vermont, one of our two, issued a statement on the 17th, what is that, last Thursday, I think, and about why he voted against the $87 billion appropriation for Iraq. And I want to share with you just a couple of small excerpts. This is Senator Pat Leahy. Actually, he read this on the floor of the Senate. And he said, a request for 800, he said, I've reviewed the materials provided by the Office of Management and Budget in support of the request, but which are useful but devoid of detail. For example, a request for $800 million for police training in Iraq is justified with only three vague sentences. Can you imagine if you could get $800 million from the government with three vague sentences? What kind of connections does that take? I mean, it would have to be that you were, for example, the company that was continuing to give a couple hundred thousand up to $1 million a year to the current vice president. You think that could be it? Leahy goes on, it is also one thing to ask for $400 million to build two new prisons. It is another to fail to explain why on earth it costs so much when the price of labor in Iraq is half what it is in the United States. This is one of many examples. $33,000 pickup trucks that cost $14,000 and $6,000 satellite phones that sell in neighboring Jordan for $500 are others that have been cited in the press and in speeches by senators. He says, of course, there are things that need to be done in Iraq, but some of these costs are shocking and inexplicable. The administration is cutting food aid for poor children in Nicaragua. 1 million children die of measles each year because they can't get a vaccine that costs pennies. 1/3 of the peoples of the world's people live in conditions most Americans would find appalling, yet we are going to build wireless internet access on the Euphrates? It makes news no sense. And then Leahy gives examples of alternatives. He says, he says that he's not opposed to rebuilding Iraq. We're there. We busted up their country. We really owe them a fix. And I agree with him. And he says, for example, the Byrd Kennedy Leahy Amendment would have allowed $10 billion of the Iraq reconstruction funds to be spent immediately. The balance of $10 billion would be withheld pending a certification by the president that the UN Security Council had authorized a multinational force under U.S. command in Iraq. That's one way to go. The Biden Amendment would have paid for the $87 billion by repealing a tiny fraction of the president's huge tax cut for the wealthy Americans. No, the president wants our grandchildren to pay for this. Or our children. And he wants us to pay the interest payments every year in the meantime. Leahy goes on to say, I offered an amendment with Senator Daschle to shift responsibility for rebuilding Iraq from the Secretary of Defense to the Secretary of State. The Pentagon's role is fighting war. Now, you get this? The Pentagon is in charge of rebuilding Iraq, but the State Department is who deals with other countries. Most appropriately, the Department of State. The Secretary of State should be handling this. The Pentagon's role, Pat Leahy says, is to fight wars, which they do superbly. It is not nation building. That is the role of the State Department. He says it's ironic that President Bush, who ridiculed the Clinton administration for nation building in the former Yugoslavia, is today defending the Pentagon's role in the biggest nation building effort in half a century. And then he goes on to point out how this policy has been just shoved down the throats of the senators. He says detractors were silenced. Other nations were bullied. Members of Congress who did not fall into line were called unpatriotic. The administration's justification for a preemptive war carried out not in self-defense, not in response to 9/11, and without United Nations support has changed from month to month, depending, it seems, on the White House's polls and what they say Americans will believe that month. He says, I am not among those who feel that everything we have done in Iraq has been a failure. To the contrary, thanks to the heroics of our soldiers, many hundreds of whom have paid with their lives and limbs, the Iraqi people have a chance to build a government they can be proud of. But the issues before us are far more complex than whether or not we should help Iraq. We should help in ways that are right for the Iraqi people and right for the American people. Not only has the White House done grave damage to our foreign relations, it has squandered our credibility with the Congress and the American people. United States Senator Patrick Leahy. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Rama in Vermont's on the line. Hey, Rama.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing today?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty darn good myself. I mean, we got to be good. We're up in Vermont.
There you go. We got about a half a minute to go in this segment. I can hold you over if you need.
Oh, that's all right. I'll go real quick. Just a couple quick points. One is that, you know, this whole bullying thing and what you're talking about is really true about how the Bush administration has bullied everybody from other countries to our own legislators here in this country into bowing under to his desires. But that's changing, and I think you see a lot of that in reflection of what they're saying, even just out of Iraq. The Iraqis are saying, no, we're not going to do it your way. We want to do it our way. But I just think as far as everything that you're saying about the various misrepresentations that come out, go back to Kay's report where he came out and said that they had laboratories suitable for manufacturing biological agents. And I just
right.
have to wonder, what is suitable?
Rama, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought over the break, okay? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back exposing the con in conservative.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Is downing Metamucil for regularity getting you down?
It's too hard to take.
But you must.
It's thick and icky, gloppy and gritty. I cannot
Next time, try FiberCon. It's a better way to stay regular because just two caplets and a refreshing glass of water is all you need to get the same results as Metamucil powder.
FiberCon! Oh, FiberCon! Your refreshing easy to take.
Use only as directed.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. And a core hotel.
No does not seem to be a concept that the ever-intrusive telemarketing industry is capable of comprehending. Even after 50 million Americans, including yours truly, signed up for the Do Not Call list that Congress approved, finally allowing us beleaguered folks a way to stop the incessant, inconvenient, and irritating sales calls from phone hucksters, the industry just kept coming. Indeed, the Direct Marketing Association.
Hey, Chuck, welcome to Nebraska. How you doing, buddy? Welcome
to Nebraska.
How are you doing?
We're lost in sauce, buddy.
You guys are having way too much fun, you know that.
Isn't that the truth? What can we do for you, Chuck?
Hey, I tell you what. I got a border collie, and I called you guys up about 9-10 months ago, and you gave me some advice. This dog was a one-person dog, and that was my wife. Mm. And you gave me some advice that said that
you
give him some time and work with him, and I did. And I just want to thank you guys for what you said to me, because I really worked with his dog, and now he's kind of on my side.
And that doesn't bother you so much, does it?
No, not really. No.
Excellent.
No, this phone call is just to thank you for your advice. I sure appreciate that, because it sure worked out good. It's worked out great.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Did you pick up your phone book the other day and almost get a hernia because of all the lawyer ads? Do you panic when you turn on the television and there is another lawyer encouraging you to call him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to find out who you can sue and what your rights are? Well, you don't need that anymore. But you know, you don't get your surgeon out of the yellow pages, and you don't need a retainer fee to listen to me. The Legal Huddle is your one-stop radio shop for everything you would ever want to know about the American legal system. I'm Ed Zelenak. I've been a prosecutor, bandleader, foreign diplomat, and advisor to presidential candidates. And as your host of the Legal Huddle, I'm uniquely qualified to answer everything you ever wanted to know about the law but were afraid to ask. And you know, if I don't know the answer, I'll make one up. You can call me with your questions, your comments, your opinions, and your feelings about our judiciary. And you know something? I will never hold you in contempt of court in the Legal Huddle. So join me and a cast of thousands here in the Legal Huddle Sunday mornings, 9 until 11, on the IE America.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks and the RNC. Welcome back. Rama, you were making a point, and the tyranny of the clock ran up against it.
The comment that came out of David Kaye's missing weapons of mass destruction report that he had spent hundreds of millions of dollars compiling and wanted another $600 million to continue...
Right.
Apparently the only basis they have now of saying anything about weapons of mass destruction are reduced to those laboratories which are suitable for manufacturing biological agents. And I guess I just wanted to point out they are so disbelievable that one can only assume that suitable biological laboratories means that they've got four walls, a ceiling, and a door for exit and entry.
Yeah, actually, it was Bush who said that they had those. I think Kaye's report indicated that they were not suitable.
No. His report said there was an underground series of laboratories that were suitable. It didn't say they were set up for it.
Yeah, in other words, it could be an empty room.
Yeah, that would be suitable, right?
Right, yeah.
But,
well, that's the thing. I mean, then they recently changed the thing with Saddam to not that he had weapons of mass destruction and was going to use them, not that he had them and not that he was building them, not that he had the raw materials. And then they went back to not that he had the ability to build them, but then they went back to he had people within the country who knew how to build them. He had the intellectual capacity to build them.
So another $600 million, and we can get down to the point where somebody thought about it one time in a bathroom.
Yeah, there you go. Rama, thank you. And this gets to my call for action for this thing. We need a law in the United States, and it's unfortunate it has come to this. You know, morality alone has always in the past prevented, at least to a substantial degree, our politicians from lying to us. They, you know, the fear that they'd get found out because we had an active and aggressive press before this enormous media consolidation, ever since Reagan pulled the plug basically on the things that held back the forces of monopoly and trust, and just, you know, just whoosh. So we used to have an aggressive and active press, which we no longer have, and we used to have an ethic in Washington D.C. That government service was service, literally the word service. Of course, it used to be that politicians didn't take large handouts from corporations. Now they've got all these like weasel ways that they can get cash to the politicians. All these free trips. I mean, look at what, over 300 free trips to the FCC commissioners, including to Hawaii, to Las Vegas, to Europe, to Rome, to London. And so it used to be that just morality prevented politicians from lying to us, or at least as blatantly as is being done now, and consistently and repeatedly. You know, the big lie just, it wouldn't have been thought of. I think this is one of the things that George Bush Sr. is so horrified about, and it's why he just decided to give Ted Kennedy his annual award for public service. And he's praising Ted Kennedy. On November 7th, he's going to give him this award. And now I believe we need a law. We need a law in the United States that makes it a crime for our elected officials to lie to us. And people say, well, wait a minute, what's the basis for that? I mean, how could you have such a law? Why hold them to a different standard than everybody else? They're not under oath. See, if you are invited into a courtroom to testify and you're put under oath and you lie, you've committed a crime. Or you speak before Congress and you lie, you've committed a crime. But was the president put under oath? Well, actually, I would say yes. It's called an oath of office. And because he has taken an oath of office, he is under oath and should be held accountable for speaking the truth. The influencing and marketing. I want to share with you how these wars have been sold and who's been doing this in this administration. It is really extraordinary. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. We'll get into that right after this break. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists say DNA in the tissue of whales tells a story that more people need to hear. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People who hunted whales in the North Atlantic Ocean years ago kept records of how many they saw. The records go back about 150 years, and they're still important today. The International Whaling Commission uses them as a measure of how many whales inhabited the North Atlantic before whaling began, and it uses that estimate to regulate hunting now. But recent studies suggest that those estimates are way off, and that whale numbers might be dangerously low. Steve Palumbi is a biologist at Stanford University, and he studies the genes of fin whales, minke whales, and humpbacks. Palumbi says there is a tremendous amount of variability in their genetic makeup. In fact, he says there's so much variability that it suggests their populations were much higher than what was recorded by whalers a century or more ago. He says the numbers written down in old logbooks are largely based on unknown papers and observations.
What that suggests to us is that there's been too much complacency in just accepting those historic numbers based on whale logbooks. The way those numbers have been generated and the way they've been used to set whale conservation targets is not very transparent. It's very difficult to figure out exactly how that was done.
Palumbi says the International Whaling Commission considers whale populations to be stable as long as they're 50% of what they were before hunting began. But he says 50% of what's in the old whaling records is much smaller than 50% of the whales that were really in the oceans. The genetic research suggests that some whale populations today are at less than 10% of their natural numbers and that they might need serious protection to start recovering. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Grew up in a small town, high on mountains in the hills and the plains. Down in those smoky valleys, where the workers in the steel mills paid. They're going to shut those places down, and I don't like the way it makes me feel. Been making steel for 100 years, and I think we got a rotten deal. American Steel Companies are the best in the land.
Welcome back. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. The Officer Strategic Influence, the Pentagon agency that would blur or even erase boundaries between factual information and news on the one hand and public relations propaganda and psychological warfare on the other, according to William Arkin in the Los Angeles Times. The Office of Strategic Influence appears to be alive and well. The Gulf War II strategy, very straightforward. The first part was to suggest that not only was Iraq behind 9/11, which most Americans who listen to Fox News believe, and most Americans who listen to other sources of news know is a lie, but also that Saddam Hussein was intending to get us, and he was going to get us with nuclear weapons. Here, for example, our president.
The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists.
Sorry about all the pauses here. He reads from left teleprompter to right teleprompter, and it pauses in between. He pauses in between to move his eyes from left to right. So, anyhow, we'll continue with this.
A group he calls his nuclear mujahideen, his nuclear holy warriors, facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun. that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Right. So we had that. And then there was also the positioning, and this subtle theme cut through the Gulf War, too, and still is being indirectly pushed by Dick Cheney and other officials. The mirror version of this, you know, there's for every thesis, there's an antithesis. There's the, for every, you know, for every heads, there's a tails, right, when you flip a coin. The mirror image of this, that is the story that the Arabs tell themselves. Whenever we trot out a theory or one of the, you know, one of our, here's what we're doing and why we're doing it, they try to make sense of it. And if they can't make sense of it, if they think it's a lie, if it doesn't seem to make sense to them based on what they know, then they look for, you know, well, what's the truth behind it? And they're not getting it, that it's just about the oil. I mean, you know, Iraq is sitting on 10% of the planet's oil. That they don't realize that Judicial Watch has sued Dick Cheney, and that you can find the documents at judicialwatch.org where they've got the paperwork from the Cheney Energy meeting with Ken Lay and the other energy guys in the spring of 2001, before 9/11, where they sat around and divided up the Iraqi oil fields, listed which countries would be interested in buying the oil, what companies in each of those countries would want it. They even divided up oil fields where there hadn't been any exploration done yet, speculating on how much oil may be under the ground that is as yet unknown. It may be that Iraq has far more oil than even Saudi Arabia. So anyhow, not knowing this, they think that the story that's widespread in the Arab world is that Israel was behind 9/11 to embarrass the Arabs. That's the 9/11 spin. Iraq was behind 9/11. The other spin, or the other strategy, is that this is a struggle between good and evil. Again, as George Bush said,
either with us or against us. You're either evil or you're good.
And that's it. Those are your choices. You're either evil or you're good. And this was a major theme in both Gulf War II and his war on terror. And, of course, the flip side of this is when the Muslim world refers to the United States as the Great Satan. And these two things in confluence created this big lie strategy that we see even today. Dick Cheney is still trying to flog. The Gulf War II influence strategy required 24/7 news cycle, or because of the 24/7 news cycle, required different strategies. They had to saturate the media time and space. The Department of Defense hired the Rendon Group, a consulting company, to sell the second Gulf War. This is the same company that they had used to sell the first Gulf War. Right? And make no mistake about it, it is selling. You have to stay on message, stay ahead of the news cycle, manage expectations, make sure that people know, you know, figure out what people are expecting and you define that. When there's a bad story, accelerate the news process so that it dies quickly in the news cycle. In other words, always have a few stories in your back pocket that you can pull out when you need. Oh, we just captured a terrorist. Have you noticed how so very often the last four or five major announcements that this administration has made about captured terrorists or threats have been arrests that were made weeks earlier? Have you noticed that? There's a reason for that. They get something good, and they stick it in their back pocket and say, we'll pull this out when the news cycle is not in our favor. We'll pull this out when we need to change the discussion that is happening in the public. And they've been very, very efficient and effective at that. And they use information to attack and punish their critics, as we've seen with Joseph Wilson. Today being day 98, that Karl Rove is still walking around loose. The Office of Global Communications, free of consequences from the Joe Wilson affair, the Office of Global Communications, created in January of 2003, was originally the White House Coalition Information Center. It was in full operation by the time the White House started its marketing campaign in September of 2002. Remember when Andrew Card said you don't roll out a product in August? Well, this is the product that they rolled out in September. It was built on the marketing successes in Afghanistan. It wrapped its major marketing effort in Afghanistan was the plight of Afghan women. You remember that? Remember Laura Bush on November 17th, 2001, saying, only the terrorists and the Taliban threatened to pull out women's fingernails for wearing nail polish. And then, strangely, that was November 17th, 3 days later, Sherry Blair over on the other side of the world says, in Afghanistan, if you wear nail polish, you could have your nails torn out. In the past year, we've not heard very much about the plight of Afghan women. Did the Bush administration save them? According to Human Rights Watch, no. Not much has changed for Afghan women. If anything, things have gotten worse in some parts of Afghanistan as a result of the rampant lawlessness that was the consequence of breaking up at what was admittedly a corrupt and inhumane regime, but that was at least keeping order. So now you've got not just the criminals in government going after people, but you've got criminals going after them as well. So there had to be this coordination between the United States and the United Kingdom. And one of the purposes of the Office of Global Communications was to ensure this coordination. They had to engineer storylines. And this was done like a marketing campaign. You got two corporate CEOs running the country, George Bush and Dick Cheney. The U.S. had a large number of the same engineered storylines as did the United Kingdom. The materials from Niger, the surrender of the 51st Iraqi Division, which was reported 4 days before the actual surrender, the weapons labs. There were a few stories that we floated that the U.K. wouldn't touch. They wouldn't go near the aluminum tubes because they knew it was a lie. They wouldn't go near, and it would be exposed. They wouldn't go near the private Lynch story because it was just, I mean, you know, there's enough cynicism in England. they just didn't think this thing would fly. And the woman hung for waving, that story that they floated for a while. No, they said no. But the U.S. and U.K. press offices had the same guidelines for framing their rhetoric, including the key words to use. They used the word armed conflict rather than war or invasion. They used the word regime whenever referring to Saddam's government instead of the words enemy or the word government. Here's some of the techniques and examples. The general technique was that you use terminology that helps brand your case. You set up staged events and make sure the media is there for them. If the media has it wrong, but it makes your case, you stay silent. If a source reports an item that hurts your case, attack the source, not the item. Joe Wilson, in case in point. And it doesn't matter if the story is true or not, as long as it's a powerful story. Like Jessica Lynch. They had code names for the operation. Now, we started putting code names to operations during World War II, and it was the reason we did it was for security purposes. Operation Overlord, which, as I recall, was the invasion at Normandy. The Gulf War I, the code names had two words, Desert Storm. The first word signified the name of the commander running the operation. However, after 9/11, the code names were changed, and we now use code names. That's the same thing with legislation. Legislation used to just be named, you know, the Revenue Act of 1940. Now it's called the Economic Opportunity for Americans Act. And the same thing with our wars now. We give them names that will allow TV news shows, particularly faux news, to create logos and theme musics. They're breaking story. You know, Private Jessica Lynch is an example of the White House releasing classified information if it helps with propaganda. The Washington Post broke the story, but they got it from people in the Pentagon. This is supposed to be highly classified stuff. They changed the terms. Iraqi irregulars. Normally you would refer to people who are not part of the army as irregulars. They're being called terrorist death squads. They were referred to as irregulars up until March 25th. The historic way that the army has referred to irregular soldiers. And then there was a letter from Rumsfeld on March 25th saying, start calling them terrorist death squads. That'll sell better. And starting on March 26th, the administration referred to them as terrorist death squads and has called them that ever since. Because calling them terrorists goes along with this Gulf War II theme that Iraq harbored terrorists, which it didn't. There are terrorists there now, but there weren't before we invaded. There was the Battle of Basra, for example. They had planned this whole media event called Operation Telic. And because they thought that they were going to take Basra and it was going to be overnight. And they had media positioned, and they had medics to provide care as the forces rolled in, and they'd bust journalists there, and TV crews were flown in, and Marines were carrying packets of food to give to the children. Everything was going to be cool. But the problem was that the battle took 2 weeks instead of a day. And so they had to pull the plug on this thing. So they had a made-for-TV event planned. In fact, a U.S. Marine Corps spokesman had said, the first image of the war will define the conflict. That was going to be the battle for Basra. But it didn't go the way that they wanted, and so they said, okay, plan B. Another example of controlling the message, punishing the French. France and Germany had supplied Iraq, we said, with switches that could be used for nuclear weapons. The French had an illegal strain of the smallpox virus. These were both leaked by American intelligence sources. Two French companies had sold spare parts to Iraq. New French-produced Roland II missiles were found in Iraq. What they failed to point out was that the production line for the Roland II was shut down in 1993, that all this stuff was back when we were supplying the exact same things to Iraq. Keep in mind, Colin Powell was part of the Bush administration that was supplying Saddam with weapons and cash when he gassed his own people at Fallujah, and then he goes there and he goes, oh, isn't it terrible, last week. But he was in charge at the time. There's the misuse of psychological operations. PSYOPs are supposed to be used against the enemy in wars, but it was used against its own citizens, in my opinion, in this war. You know, here's an example of proper use of psychological operations. 4 days before the Iraqi 51st Division surrendered, the United States government reported that they had surrendered. Now, the reason you do that is to make other Iraqi forces want to surrender. That makes sense. But the what are called black programs, black propaganda in the intelligence community, intentionally planting false news stories, blowing people's covers, like, you know, in the Joe Wilson case, the Niger material, nuclear materials, things like this. These are relics of the Cold War. We claimed that the Soviet Union had used booby-trapped toys in Afghanistan. They didn't. Those are cluster bombs. Same thing, that, you know, just like ours. They claimed that the Soviet Union claimed during the Cold War that we were responsible for creating and experimenting with AIDS in Africa. I mean, these kinds of things. The Organization of Propaganda Campaign, the Special Plans Office, it was supported by information from the Iraqi National Congress. The Rendon Group, headed by John Rendon, gave advice to the White House, OSD, and Joint Chiefs. All of this coming together to market this thing. I am strongly of the opinion that it is time that we pass a law in the United States that says that if an elected official who has taken an oath of office lies to the American people, that lie is considered under oath. And they have to justify it. They have to demonstrate why it was so important to say that lie or face the consequences of it. Captain Gerald Mowers is the Assistant Deputy Director of Information Operations. His list of things that they had to do, they wanted to slowly integrate the Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs offices. They wanted to create a USG Strategic Fusion Center that brings everything together. They wanted more use of Hollywood and Madison Avenue. Originally, when they put this thing together, this PR plan, the plan was, it was called the Definition of Information Operations. That was the original draft. And originally it said it was going to be used against the adversary. In other words, we're creating psychological operations to use against Iraqis and against Iraq. But when it came back from the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, the word adversary had been changed to adversarial decision-making. In other words, the decision had been made to turn, in my opinion, to turn these efforts not just to the Iraqis, but to the American people themselves. We'll even go after our friends if they don't agree with our decisions. Welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
To create
create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
It's the great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday.
Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah, yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Oh, no.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
An interview with George and Pickles from the current issue of Ladies Home Journal. They're asked about what September 11, 2001 was like for them personally. Although over 3,000 people had just perished, George W. was able to find some humor by the end of the day.
The day ended on a relatively humorous note. The agent said, "You'll be sleeping downstairs." And I said, "No, we like our own bed." So I told the agent, "We're going upstairs." And the agent comes running up and says, "Run your tack. We need you downstairs." So there we go. I'm in my running shorts and my T-shirt, and I'm barefooted, got the dog in one hand, Laura had the cat.
I don't have my contacts in, and I'm in my fuzzy house slippers.
We're heading straight down to the basement because there's an incoming unidentified airplane which is going here toward the White House, and then the guy says it's a friendly airplane, and we hustle all the way back upstairs and go to bed.
And we just lay there thinking about the way we must have looked.
We got a laugh out of it.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Telling
telling the truth, the multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson: peace and friendship with all mankind is our wisest policy, and I wish we may be permitted to pursue it. The Der Spiegel, which is sort of like Time magazine in Germany, has an article up on their website translated into English. And they say that Iraqis are concerned that their country is being sold out. This is we're starting to get a lot of blowback on this. And so this is what happens when a government decides that they're going to pursue a policy. I mean, this is just like the article in the New York Times about how the State Department had done a study that predicted all the things that are happening in Iraq right now, and it was ignored by the Pentagon. You know, year-long study, 200 Iraqi lawyers, engineers, business people, and other experts. And they predicted all these things. But this administration had this idea, you know, there's that oil there, there's that country there, we'll stabilize the Middle East, we'll get, you know, go in there. And they didn't listen to the people who were saying, you know, you're going to have to give up a lot of America to take that part of Iraq. Because you're not going to be able to fix your own roads. You're not going to be able to pay for your own schools. You're going to go into debt. Big time. I mean, this is more than the Marshall Plan. It's more, even if you translate the Marshall Plan into today's dollars, it's more than our share of the Marshall Plan was. And then we go in and we say, okay, and not only that, all these companies, all these Iraqi companies, Americans can buy. We must change this. We just must change this. This administration's policies are driving us off the edge of a cliff. And it is so important that we awaken each other and be ready to be politically active in November of 2004 and even before then. The Americans have made quite a few mistakes in Iraq, says Chouderi, says this guy, one of the wealthiest guys, Mohammed Al-Chouderi. Faisal Al-Chouderi is one of the wealthiest guys in Iraq. He says, but this law is their biggest mistake so far. It has the effect of dynamite. This is the law saying that would allow American firms to acquire full ownership of Iraqi firms and bring all the profits back home. And the Iraqis are going nuts. It's time for a change. Absolutely. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us.
But this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Under pressure from potential donors, the Bush administration will allow a new agency to determine how to spend billions of dollars in reconstruction assistance for Iraq. The new agency will be run by the World Bank and the United Nations and will work independently of the American occupation. They are to announce the change at a donor conference in Madrid later this week. The change effectively establishes some of the international control over Iraq that the United States opposed in the drafting of the United Nations Security Council resolution that passed on Thursday. Thursday's resolution referred to two established agencies to ensure that aid would be audited. But diplomats say other countries were unwilling to make donations, calling the United States as an occupying power, controlling Iraq's reconstruction and self-rule. Eight Marine reservists accused in the mistreatment of prisoners of war in Iraq were being held at Camp Pendleton on charges ranging from negligent homicide to dereliction of duty. A lawyer representing one of the men said the Army did not have the necessary personnel to run the detention camp, and the reservists were untrained for the job. The reservists belonged to the 2nd Battalion, 25th Marine Regiment. Their hometowns were not immediately released, and it was not known if all had retained lawyers. Legal proceedings were expected Monday against a college student who was accused of hiding box cutters and other banned items aboard two Southwest Airlines planes. Prosecutors were still trying to determine what charges they might bring against Nathaniel Heatwall, a 20-year-old college student who had warned officials he would try to bring forbidden articles onto commercial flights to expose holes in airline security. Officials said he sent the government an email last month warning of his intention to carry out the plan, and he included dates and locations where he would carry out the attacks. Heatwall said he had been interviewed by the FBI in connection with the Southwest Airlines incidents on Thursday night. More IE American Network news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
A judge has dismissed a defamation lawsuit filed by a former schoolmate of rapper Eminem, and she included a rap of her own to explain the ruling. In a footnote to the opinion, Judge Deborah Servito added a 10-stanza rhyme. The verse stated in part, "It is therefore this court's ultimate position that Eminem is entitled to a summary disposition." Don't give up your day job, Judge. For the IE America Radio Network, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
No does not seem to be a concept that the ever-intrusive telemarketing industry is capable of comprehending. Even after 50 million Americans, including yours truly, signed up for the Do Not Call list that Congress approved, finally allowing us beleaguered folks a way to stop the incessant, inconvenient, and irritating sales calls from phone hucksters, the industry just kept coming. Indeed, the Direct Marketing Association, the front group for 5,000 of these diabolical dialing companies, has waged a relentless legal battle against us privacy seekers, claiming in court that we 50 million people have no right to say no to their automated invasions of our homes. To the contrary, they claim that corporations have a constitutional free speech right to barrage us as often as they want. Think about that. They sued us for trying to keep them from bothering us. But wait a minute. Guess whose names have cropped up among the 50 million on the Do Not Call list? Top executives of telemarketing corporations and of the Direct Marketing Association itself. In a delicious bit of journalistic digging, the Hartford Courant newspaper found that 11 of DMA's top honchos have their home numbers on the list, including two senior vice presidents, three other vice presidents, and four members of the association's board of directors. Apparently, those who make big bucks from the business of bothering people at home don't want to be bothered themselves. There are so many calls I don't want, complained a DMA senior vice president who recently retired. They are disturbing my routine, he says. Yes, sir, we know just how you feel. This is Jim Hightower saying, if there was a merit badge for hypocrisy, these people would be Eagle Scouts. I say they should have to publicize their phone numbers so we consumers can call them at home every night, right at dinner time.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast and around the world. Welcome back. Today, the 20th of October, the 61st anniversary of George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, losing his company, the Union Banking Corporation, because of the Trading with the Enemy Act. His company was shut down by the Roosevelt administration for trading with the enemy during World War II, giving aid and comfort to Mr. Hitler. Today's Associated Press reports the story. Is religious rhetoric putting our ability to practice diplomacy at risk? This topic, this kind of dances around the edge of a larger topic as well that I think is worth bringing out and talking about. And if there are other things that you'd like to get into, or if you have other questions about or thoughts on or comments you want to make about the news of the day, feel free to give us a shout. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. But I think that this is an important one. And that is the positioning of religion, the political use, the international political use, and the domestic political use of religion. I find it fascinating. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal last Friday that was quoting a book which is out, which I do not have, but I'm going to go looking for here, and quoting a couple of other articles about this issue. And one of the things that they suggest is that Democrats are less likely to be religious in the church-going sense, and Republicans are more likely to be religious in the church-going sense, and that's going to be made into a big issue by the Republicans in November. This is their secret weapon. And I don't think it's a secret weapon. I think they've been using this for some time. But it's interesting how it's positioned. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Mike in Powder Springs, Georgia. I've driven through Powder Springs, Georgia. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
How you doing, sir?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Mike?
Not too bad. I was listening to your show, and actually it's the first time I've heard it. And I was listening to many of the topics that you have, and I guess we're diametrically opposed politically.
Okay.
some of the things you were talking about earlier about the founding fathers and I guess through Roosevelt saying that America should have a progressive tax system, whereas the working people should be taxed more to support an ever-growing federal government and to basically support the infrastructure in this country. That's
well,
not...
I think you've just concatenated three distortions of what I said, Mike. You want to break them out and take them one at a time?
Well, let's start with our founding fathers. This country was started because we wanted to be free from an oppressive government. That was the key reason why people left their original countries to get here, because this was a land of freedom and opportunity. And our Constitution was specifically written to limit the powers of the federal government so it wouldn't be intrusive within our lives.
No, wait a second, Mike. No, that's not true.
Yes, it is.
No, no. The reality is that our Constitution
here,
was... Mike, listen to me. Our Constitution was written. Yes, there are certain limitations on what the government can do, but those were very... The whole point of the Bill of Rights was to... In fact, there was a big argument about whether the Bill of Rights should even be attached to the Constitution, because according to the Adams side of the faction, the Federalist side of the faction, well, James Madison for that point, said everybody knows that these rights are that the government shall not infringe on these rights. Everybody knows this. And Jefferson said, no, we have to nail this down so that the people in the future who don't know the history of this country won't forget freedom of the press is, it can't be corrupted, that people have Fifth Amendment rights not to speak against themselves, and all these other things. He said, we have to nail this down. So absolutely, limitations were in place. But the key thing that you're missing, Mike, is that the Constitution was created to create a government, unlike the British government, to create a government where the government is us. It's you and me.
Absolutely correct.
And we were limiting...
Tom, hold on one second. Tom, to keep a government of us, we have to keep the government in a very limited position to keep it of us. And that's the part that you are fundamentally missing.
Well, we're defining limited differently.
Well... I want to know that...
See, Thomas Jefferson... Let me just lay this out here, Mike. Thomas Jefferson explicitly said... huge argument that they had in 1787, 1788, when they were putting together the Constitution and trying to market it and attaching the Bill of Rights to it. And Jefferson wanted there to be two further amendments to the Constitution. One, a ban on commercial monopolies, and another, a ban on a standing army during times of peace. He wanted there to be a navy to protect our shores, but he felt that it was dangerous to the United States if there would be an army. He was basically warning about the creation of a military-industrial complex.
Right. I mean, I don't disagree with you there. But again, when we go back to the founding of this country, it was to limit the government. You're dead on that point. It's just where you're taking it a step further. You're advocating that we should increase our taxes in order to have the government further intrude into our lives. And that's where you and I have a fundamental disagreement. And I think
What's the intrusion into our lives, Mike?
Say again?
What's the intrusion into our lives?
Well, when you start taxing everything under the sun, when you start raising your taxes to the point where it's going to be over 50%, that's a huge intrusion. I work dang hard for every penny that I earn, and then to watch 50% of that go to people who don't...
How much money do you make, Mike?
Right around $75,000 a year.
I don't think that any rational progressive would suggest that you should pay ever anything close to 50%.
Well, tell that to Joe Lieberman. Tell that to Al Sharpton. Tell that to the rest of the Democratic Party. Tell that to Wesley Clark.
I haven't heard any of them suggest anything like that. I don't know where you're getting your information.
They do not listen to their speech programs. Lieberman wants to raise the tax. It's up to, I think it's 39%. Do away with the Bush taxes. What that means is that when you combine that with the state taxes, all of your sales taxes that go into everything that you have, you're going to raise the actual taxation of each individual American to over 51%.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, Mike.
Go ahead.
If that happened, let's say that you're paying 50% of your income in taxes. There have certainly been times in my life when I have literally paid 50% of my income in taxes.
Well, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, and in fact, probably more than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say that you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And if in exchange for that, what you got was that you didn't have to mess around with health insurance companies.
I'm sorry, but my family is from Britain, and they have a state-run health organization over there, and quite frankly, it's not the best in the world. There's a reason why people come to this country. Let's say,
for example,
you have a problem with your eyes.
Socialized medicine.
Say again?
In England, the government runs the healthcare system, and it sucks.
I'm fully aware. That's why
I have, however, lived in Germany, where the government does not run the
healthcare
system. And if you need health care, you simply go and get it from a private person, and the government pays the bill. That's called a single-payer health care system, and that works.
Well, Tom,
and that's how most of the countries of the world
do.
Have it working.
Tom, here's what I'd ask you to do. This is a fundamental thing here. Whenever you use the term government, supplant that with the word the people pay for something. And I think that'll open your eyes to what's actually happening. So whenever you say, for example, it's government-run health care, you mean people-run health care or taxpayer-run health care.
No, I'm saying people taxpayer paid health care, not run.
Look at the U.S. mail. Okay, there's a reason why it's so slow, because it is a bureaucracy.
It's slow.
Yes, it's slow.
We've got one of the best mail services in the world.
Okay, well, I still don't want those same people running my health care system. If you go hospital, would you say that the VA hospitals are some of the best run hospitals in this country?
No, I think they're a tragedy, and that's
why?
One of the reasons why the government should not be in the healthcare business.
Well, then why could you say run a government-funded health service? You can't have
because there's a difference between paying something and running it.
Well, the reason
there's a huge difference. If you don't get it, I'm sorry, but there's a huge difference between running a health service and paying for it, night and day.
No, if you're going to have a government-run healthcare system, you're going to have government bureaucracies included within it.
I don't want a government-run healthcare system, Mike.
What you want and what's actually going to happen are two separate entities. That's the part that you're missing.
Mike, no. What you're missing is that Medicare, which is a government-paid-for healthcare system, mm-hmm. operates at a cost of 3%, whereas your health insurance company almost certainly operates at a cost of somewhere between 15 and 25%.
Why
the difference?
No.
Because your health insurance company is making a profit.
Why do people go into medicine? Why? Simple question.
Well, there's no simple answer. Some people go into medicine for the money. Some people go into medicine for the love of it. I mean,
there's a twofold reason. One, and I would love to say that it was because it's for the love of their fellow man, but primarily because there's a huge profit to turn.
I'm sorry, Mike. Mike, I appreciate your call. You're off the edge. Not a chance. I know a lot of people in medicine, and I don't know any of them, frankly. I hear of people who went into medicine for the money. But I, honest to God, I don't know any, and I know quite a few physicians and people who have other roles, significant other roles in medicine. And if you really think that, that's a tragedy. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Joe in State College, Pennsylvania, your thoughts on all this stuff, or did you want to get back to religion? Oh, Joe is gone. I'm sorry. We got Ed in Dayton, Ohio, though. Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello. I just wanted to talk to you for a minute about what the previous caller was doing. I don't think he had an open mind about what you were saying, because no matter what you said, he kept reverting back to his script about state-run health care. And I think that there are a lot of people out there who have been sold a bill of goods and are not really open to hearing about what can really be done about this. I run into people like Mike all the time who just don't want to consider the possibility that we need the government to do anything. Even if it's only in the form of taking the place of the private for-profit insurance companies that are bilking us now.
Yeah, and Ed, you know what's so ironic is that Mike will get out and he'll hop into his car and he'll drive down a citizen taxpayer paid for right-of-way road, and he'll pass a truck that citizens are paying for, taxpayers are paying for, that's trimming the trees along the right-of-way that the cable
Absolutely.
Companies and the electric companies and the phone companies are using to bring utilities into his house, and he'll go to a restaurant that seems to be run by a private individual and have a nice meal that is safe because the government paid for, taxpayer paid for, USDA and Food and Drug Administration made sure that we don't have the problems that you have in 90% of the rest of the planet, of population-wise anyway, of disease. And he'll stand out afterwards, looking up at the sky, thinking, isn't it great I can breathe fresh air because of the government paid for, Environmental Protection Agency. And anybody who says, oh, no, it's corporations who made that all better, they don't know the history of regulatory agencies. They have been fought tooth and nail by corporations in this country. And then he'll say, it's great to live in a country where the government doesn't do anything. And it's just amazing. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Ed, thanks for the comment. We'll be right back.
in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here again to tell you about InPhone. I hate asking people for directions. It's embarrassing. So instead, I call InPhone. And the nice operator at InPhone gives me driving directions, phone numbers, movie times, or restaurant reservations. So cling to your independence like I do. Call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Jesse sent you. Call now. InPhone. How can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
The following conversation is real. It took place on April 12, 2003, between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber.
OnStar Center, this is Orlando. How may I help you?
Hi, my name is Stacey Noble, and someone broke into my back window.
Okay, did you call the police?
You're my first phone call.
When you have OnStar, no matter where you go, a live advisor is available to help 24 hours a day.
Okay, what I'll do is contact the police and I'll conference you.
Okay.
Police 911 emergency.
Hi, my name is Orlando. I'm calling from OnStar. I have a subscriber on our line whose vehicle was vandalized. Now, conference her in, so that way she can get more information from her.
Thanks a lot.
Hello, Mrs. Noble. I do have police on the line.
Hi, Mrs. Noble. What happened?
Well, I parked the car at the intersection of Ordway.
OnStar is available on the Saturn View, Ion, and L series. To learn more, visit your Saturn retailer or Saturn.com.
Was there anything else I can do for you at this time, Mrs. Noble?
I just love you so much. I can't even believe how many times I've been thankful for OnStar.
If you need any more assistance from us, just go ahead and give us a call.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
OnStar. Always there. Always
ready. If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Mike, I appreciated that call. I really, really did, because you provided me with an opportunity to just clarify so many things. We have this extraordinary welfare system in the United States called the home mortgage tax deduction that has stabilized the middle class. We have minimum wage laws that helped create the middle class back in the 1930s. We have the currency of our country is regulated and stabilized by we the people government, by a government that we pay for. Government isn't evil. Government is us. At least so far. I mean, if it ever becomes evil, the Declaration of Independence tells us that we have to change it. We have to do something about that. And I don't think that we're to the point where we should do anything like what the Declaration was talking about, but I do think that this administration has gone right flat off the edge. I mean, it's running up trillion-dollar debts in the name of our children and requiring us to pay hundreds of millions a year, hundreds of billions a year in tax, in interest payments on this debt, most of which is held by foreign nations, and much of which is held by foreign central banks that could just flip our economy so badly if they decided that they wanted to harm us. It's just an incredibly dangerous thing. We need to at least balance our budget first. We've got to get back to fiscal sanity, fiscal responsibility. This is a position, by the way, that used to be called conservative. And it's so strange that it's now considered liberal. Although, historically, I think liberals were in favor of a balanced budget as well. Roosevelt was very upset about the fact that he was going into deficit spending for the New Deal and for the war, and was strongly opposed, and it was a very legitimate debate. Back to this thing about religion. I just want to share with you a clip here. This kind of sets this up. Here, Condi Rice. Now, we've had this three-star general, Boynton, I think his name was, going on to this whole rant about how the real enemy is Satan, and we're in a battle against evil here in the world. And well, let me get to that in just a second here. I've got a caller, and let's hear what Jim has to say. I can play you this clip here after the break. Jim, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, this is Tom Hartman. You're on the air. Oh, he left a message. Oh, Jim called and he wants to know how the German system differs from the British system. Oh, interesting. Okay. Here's the difference, as far as I know it, Jim. In the British system, the government actually provides services. That is, many of the people in the British system, and perhaps the majority of them, I'm not sure. I'm not conversant with it at that level of minutia, but I have used the British healthcare system. Myself and also my daughter one time when we were traveling, she got sick, and they actually, doctor came to the house of the people we were staying with at 11:30 at night to see her, which is amazing. I mean, just boggled my mind. But anyhow, these guys are government employees, and that has created, there's the problem created, some would say, by the fact that the employees of the government are the ones providing the healthcare services. I think that there's an upside and downside to that. The other is that the British system is dramatically underfunded compared to our system. They're having really bad problems over there because they're just simply not funding their system well. But in Germany, the way it works is nobody works for the government who's providing health care. When I lived in Germany, if you needed something, you called a doctor, a private doctor, or you went to a hospital, a private hospital, or a hospital, a nonprofit. Usually they're owned or run by, you know, as a nonprofit corporation serving a local community. And the government simply paid for it. The government was the insurance company. And you present your card when you show up, and they just write down your information, you know, basically your user number, and boom, that's it. You never see a bill. Never saw a piece of paper. But it's an entirely private system. It works brilliantly. And that's called single-payer health care. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Thank you. Scientists say DNA in a tissue of whales tells a story that more people need to hear. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People who hunted whales in the North Atlantic Ocean years ago kept records of how many they saw. The records go back about 150 years, and they're still important today. The International Whaling Commission uses them as a measure of how many whales inhabited the North Atlantic before whaling began, and it uses that estimate to regulate hunting now. But recent studies suggest that those estimates are way off, and that whale numbers might be dangerously low. Steve Palumbi is a biologist at Stanford University, and he studies the genes of fin whales, minke whales, and humpbacks. Palumbi says there is a tremendous amount of variability in their genetic makeup. In fact, he says there's so much variability that it suggests their populations were much higher than what was recorded by whalers a century or more ago. He says the numbers written down in old logbooks are largely based on unknown papers and observations.
What that suggests to us is that there's been too much complacency in just accepting those historic numbers based on whale logbooks. The way those numbers have been generated and the way they've been used to set whale conservation targets is not very transparent. It's very difficult to figure out exactly how that was done.
Palumbi says the International Whaling Commission considers whale populations to be stable as long as they're 50% of what they were before hunting began. But he says 50% of what's in the old whaling records is much smaller than 50% of the whales that were really in the oceans. The genetic research suggests that some whale populations today are at less than 10% of their natural numbers and that they might need serious protection to start recovering. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
8 years of peace and prosperity. Scandal in the White House. Election is what we need. From coast to coast to Washington.
Welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. One out of every three people in England says religion is very important to them. Only about one out of ten in France say religion is most important to them. France being the most secular of the Western European countries, about 11% saying religion plays a very important role in their lives. The British being the most religious in Europe, 33% saying religion plays an important role in their lives. But in the United States, 6 out of 10 Americans say religion plays a, quote, very important, end quote, role in their lives. Okay, this is according to a study done by the National Center for Policy Analysis and the Pew Global Attitudes Project. This is a study that was done of 44 nations, and it was published last December. The highest level of religion being very important to people's lives, it was in the predominantly Muslim nations, Indonesia, Pakistan, Mali, and Senegal, where 90% of the public said religion was very important to them. But keep in mind, here in the United States, it's 60%. So now we are seeing religious rhetoric, because this represents this huge constituency. I mean, here, this piece in the Wall Street Journal, and I don't know if this is, if what we're looking at here is spin and deception or is interesting information. Let me just read you this quote. This is from this book. There's this new book out about, I'm looking for the title here. I'll come up with it anyway. The Great Divide, Religious and Cultural Conflict in American Party Politics is the title of the book by Vanderbilt political scientist Jeffrey Lehman. And he says 60% of first-time white delegates at the 1992 Democratic Convention in New York City either claimed no attachment in religion or displayed the minimal attachment by attending worship services a few times a year or less. Okay. Now, there's two interesting things that they said there. Number one, first they said white delegates. And the Democratic Party has a large minority, constituency. So they're just looking at a slice of it. And then they said 60% of them either claimed no attachment or minimal attachment by attending worship services a few times a year. Now, does that mean religion is or is not important to them? Who knows? And then they say about 5% of delegates at the Republican convention in Houston identified themselves as secularists. Now, what they do with this little bit of verbal jujitsu here is imply that those 60% of Democrats are secularists. First of all, I don't believe it. I think if you walked up to most Democrats, whether they go to church regularly or not, and said, "Are you a secularist?" they would probably not know what you meant. Or they would think it was a dirty term. They would say no. And certainly if you walk up to Republicans and say, "Are you a secularist?" only 5% are going to say yes, as they found. But I think if they walked up to Republicans and said, "How often do you attend worship services a few times a year or less?" that they may find a lot more than 95%, a lot more than 5% saying yes. So they're using different criteria. Among the Democrats, they're only talking to the whites, and they're saying, and they're calling them secularists. Not asking them if they would call themselves secularists, but calling them secularists if they attend church less than a few times a year. With the Republicans, they're going to them, and they're, regardless of race, and they're, although that probably the Houston Republican convention was probably 99% white, given how that party seems to shake out in that part of the country, and they went around and they said, do you consider yourself a secularist? And of course, only 5% said yes. Now, what they're trying to say here is the Democrats don't believe in God, and Republicans do. Back to the Wall Street Journal article, they say in the 1992 election, Bill Clinton got 75% of the secularist vote, while the current president's father received support from traditionalist churchgoers by 2-1. See, again, here we're mixing two different kinds of numbers. That pattern held in the 2000 election. And then they go on to say, secularists today are as important to the Democratic Party as another key constituency, organized labor. And then they point out that the entire battlefield of the culture wars, abortion, sexuality, prayer, and school judicial nominations, breaks down along these lines. And there, I'm starting to think, well, maybe there is something to what they're saying. And they point out that Howard Dean, John Kerry, or Joe Lieberman may find themselves as, quote, the leaders of the party of non-belief, end quote, or hypocrites. And I think we can see the Republican strategy here forming. In fact, they ask the pastor of the largest church in Texas, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, what he thought about all this. And they said he expects evangelicals to go to the polls for Mr. Bush, quote, in record numbers, end quote. Quote, our people didn't quite know George Bush in the last election, but they do now, end quote. And so this... here we have the spin, and then we've got this general running around going, we're on a war on behalf of God. And then you've got Condi Rice coming along and trying to do damage control.
The president's views on this are absolutely clear, and I think the president is very clear on what he means here. This is not a war between religions.
Now, on the other hand, you've got folks who are sitting over there in the Middle East, where 90%, I mean, here 60% of Americans say religion is very important to them. There, 90% say it's important to them. And they hear George Bush saying things like this.
But our responsibility to history is already clear. To answer these attacks and rid the world of evil.
of evil, a religious term, and this.
The liberty we prize is not America's gift to the world. It is God's gift to humanity. We Americans have faith in ourselves, but not in ourselves alone. We do not claim to know all the ways of providence, yet we can trust in them, placing our confidence in the loving God behind all of life.
Now, see, in the past, well,
in all of history, may He guide us now, and may God continue to bless the United States of America.
Yeah, very nice sentiment. I don't know the context of that, so I don't.
I welcome faith. I welcome faith to help solve the nation's deepest problems.
Yeah, and if you know, I have to say, in some ways, I welcome faith too, and I think that it is an important thing. But I don't think that the politicizing of faith is a useful thing for America. I'm very concerned about that. I'm very concerned about the consequences of that. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in State College, Pennsylvania, has some thoughts on the topic. Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Hi, sorry, I was cut off there before. I just wanted to address this religion issue because I think this fits into, first of all, a general strategy, which is to throw the progressives back on their heels, defending themselves against, you know, being sexually promiscuous or godless or whatever. And, you know, what's really necessary is to take the battle to them. And
well, Joe, just a second, before you go any further, what if liberals actually are more sexually promiscuous and godless than Republicans
or
conservatives?
Well, the point would be to address issue, for example, of sexual liberty without being embarrassed about it, if that were true.
Yeah.
But that's sort of a side issue. What I wanted to talk specifically.
Well, they're
going to
make it front and center. That's why I asked the question.
Well, the point is, the more you let them put you back on your heels and not set the debate, the bigger trouble you're going to be in. And they've been very successful at doing this for 20 years.
Well, it's really interesting the way that the cons spin this, because on the one hand, they're talking about freedom and liberty, and on the other hand, they're saying, but we want to discuss what you do in your bedroom, and we want to regulate that and control it. We do want freedom and liberty, but we want to make sure that if what you're doing in your bedroom isn't something we agree with, that we can nail you for it, or that we can deny you things that other people who do different things in their bedrooms get from society as a whole.
Well, can I address the religion
sure.
thing then?
Sure, yeah.
Okay,
I think that
by proactive, what I mean is this. In fact, despite, there's a myth, I think, that the progressives are vulnerable on religion. And it just takes some courage and vision to realize it could be a horrible wedge issue for the right. Just like, I think, libertarianism, which you mentioned, right? Because mm-hmm. you could construe this whole issue of coming into my bedroom as a libertarian issue. That's a wedge issue because the current coalition that Bush depends on uses libertarians who are largely secular and these religious cultural conservatives. The fact is, I was raised a Catholic. I'm not a particularly religious guy now, but, you know, the fact is the Catholic ethos, for example, is not really big on crony capitalism, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Christian ethos, I mean, you know, just go back and look at the words of Jesus, you know. And for that matter, I'd say all of the major religions are not
right.
big on crony capitalism.
Exactly. So the point is there are a lot of progressive Christians out there and Jews. And liberals in general have to get better at stopping this circular firing squad thing of if I'm a secular liberal, I start saying bad things, blanket statements about religion. This is just killing us, actually,
mm-hmm.
because what we're
yeah.
doing is we're conceding the entire realm of values and religion to the Republicans, and they've been beating the crap out of us with it. You know,
yeah, and I think Go ahead.
Well, we just have to stop that.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, I find the values that are held by progressives and liberals in this country and those who, you know, what I describe as the radical middle, I think those folks who would say that, you know, there's not a good label to define it, but, you know, let's talk about what works in this country, would say that the idea of making sure that everybody has health care, caring for the sick. I mean, this is the Matthew 25 paradox. The you know, in without preaching here. In the thing that so many of the conservatives who claim religion miss is that there is one big moment in the New Testament where the disciples came to Jesus and said, "Okay, how do we get into heaven?" And he's talking about the end days, and he says, and you know, and he's going to sit there on his throne, and he's going to sort the sheep from the goats being the bad guys, and they're going to go off, you know, into eternal damnation, and the sheep are going to go to heaven. And then they say, well, you know, what's the criteria of the sorting? And he says, when those of you who fed me when I was hungry, who gave me thirst water when I was thirsty, who visited me when I was in prison, who gave me clothing when I was naked, who gave me shelter when I'm not sure the shelter is in there, and I don't remember the list, frankly, but that's essentially it. And they say, but you know, we didn't do that. You were never hungry. And he says, as you did it to the least among these, among you, you did it to me. And that's the criteria. And if that's the true Christian criteria, then the conservative values are anti-Christian. The conservative values of, oh, you know, forget about the people in need, and for, you know, and the liberal values become incredibly at the core of religion. And you know, Jimmy Carter pointed this out, a very religious guy. But anyhow, Joe, thoughts on that final?
Well, I just wanted to say that you know, the one thing that struck me when you were talking is you used something that we all do, a sort of a liberal tick, which was, I don't want to judge. And you know what? You should. And we have to get more comfortable with a type of judging that's consistent with our progressive values. Because,
well,
you know...
Joe, I think that there are, you know, if you go back to the Myers-Briggs thing and to Carl Jung, he came up with this notion of judgers and perceivers. You know, that there are some people, about 20% of the population, who see everything in black and white and judge everything. And there's only two realms for them. You're either good or you're evil. And then there's about 80% of the population who are perceivers, who can see all the shades of gray and understand that there's stuff in the middle. And frankly, I'm a perceiver. I'm not a judger, and I'm not going
to change. Don't you need to be able to say that the, you know, categorizers, the judgers, as you were just describing them, don't you need to be able to explicitly call them out and say that this is no way to run a civil society? You know, you need to be able to make that judgment, which you do on your show.
Sure.
So that's what I'm saying. And in fact, there are progressive Christians and Jews, for example, who probably would do a very good job articulating theologically why perceivers are, you know, in good stead with God, you know. And I just would like to see us try to get those people a little more front and center in some of these
debates. Well, I'm seeing, yeah, okay, good point. Point taken. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for calling, and you know, I appreciate your call. And I think that it's important that we consider, well, okay, I'm not going to go farther down that road. We'll take a call here from John in Minneapolis. John, thank you for calling. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I really am glad you're talking about religion in the politics. I consider myself now very religious. I'm an Episcopalian. When my children were born a few years ago, I got back to the church because I wanted to give them a strong foundation, and a foundation that served me well growing up. And the more I learn about religion, the more I study my faith, study the Bible, the more I'm convinced that religion, followed from the words of the Bible, is liberal. The quote that you had, we just actually spoke about that one in one of the readings of our services yesterday. You know, you do unto the least me, you do unto me. And there was another passage a few weeks back in one of the readings that literally the wealthy will have as much trouble getting to heaven as they can going through the eye of a needle. That's badly paraphrased, but basically said, give away your wealth. And I'm not advocating that everybody go out and give away their wealth, but it does talk about, in the Bible, taking care of those who cannot take care of themselves. We had a quote yesterday, his wife actually gave the sermon, quoting Martin Luther King and the God of History, that repeated that same quote. And if you're a Christian, you've got to be looking at what is God going to judge us on now. God is going to judge us on how we take care of those who can't take care of themselves.
Yeah, and so I'm John, in the 15 seconds or so we've got, what's your suggestion here?
My suggestion for the political people is don't be afraid to quote the Bible and say, hey, this is what we are taught by Jesus. This is what we are taught in religion. And it is not what the conservatives are trying to do. Don't let them co-opt the Bible.
Good one, John. Thank you. They've been stealing Christianity just like they've and Judaism and everything just like they've been stealing. This is Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
The great savings event at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Hurry in and save $6 a gallon on all paints and stains, including Super Paint and Everclean in our new plastic twist and pour container. Plus, save 30 to 64% on all wallpaper. Stop by soon. Sale ends Monday. Ask Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody. How do we choose how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights? James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Ugly
weapon. They flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman, the IE America Radio Network. You know, Abraham Lincoln occasionally used scripture passages, but he never, ever used them to put God on anyone's side during a war. He used scripture to call upon everyone for humility, repentance, and reconciliation, particularly after the war. But can you imagine how much damage he would have done if he had said that the South was evil? That if he had said to them, you are evil? Not you're doing an evil thing, but you guys, you're evil. Can you imagine if Abraham Lincoln, speaking for the North, had said to the South something like this?
With us or against us, you're either evil or you're good.
Can you imagine the kind of damage? Can you imagine how horrified the people in the Middle East are? I mean, what kind of reconciliation can ever come after this kind of language? 1-800-TALK, yes. Our number of the last couple minutes of the show here, Jeff in Denver's on the line. Jeff, your thoughts?
Regarding what one of the last few callers said about judging,
mm-hmm.
One of the most freeing things that ever happened to me, and judging has always been a problem, you know, you hear that thing, judge not, lest you be judged, and so forth,
right,
was distinguishing the word judging from discernment. That we, you know, judging to me is the good or the bad stuff, saying this is good, this is bad. But discerning, you can discern that this is harming people. You can discern this and that.
Sure. Well, Jeff, just to correct your understanding of that biblical scripture there, that little Jesus said, judge not lest you be judged, for with the measure by which you judge, you shall be judged. In other words, you can go ahead and judge somebody if you want, but you have to be willing to be judged by the same standard.
Exactly.
So it wasn't a don't ever judge people. It was a look out, because whatever standard you use is going to be used by, and frankly, I think we judge ourselves by the standards that we judge others with.
Yes.
I think it was good psychology as well as good theology. But anyhow, you were saying.
Yeah, well, and that is what it says. But a lot of us, unfortunately, interpret it as that thing is just don't judge.
Yeah,
we need to be
Jeff,
out there freely.
That music means that the show has come to its end. Thank you for your call. I appreciate you calling in. Always nice to hear from you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson down in Atlanta. Engineered by Shar Jones. A beautiful job of running the board today, Shar. Thank you so much. Tune in tomorrow. Same time, same place. See you then.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
To see why people would call you up, you really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh.